Well, today, brethren, I'm going to continue with our series on Colossians. We have two group of people that we're going to begin speaking with. We'll cover one of these groups today. And then the next time, maybe not the next sermon, but the next time we go back to Colossians, we'll cover this other group of people. But today we're going to be covering the Christian home employees. Employees. Again, the Apostle Paul is writing from house arrest around 62 AD, and he's covering everything. He covered husbands, he covered wives, he covered carnality, he covered children, fathers. And now he's going to be talking about employees and employers. So he's covering everything. He's making sure that all of the different areas with regard to the congregation is covered. The depth of love that he has is amazing. I'm going to take my time going through this today. I do have a lot of notes, but I think it's an important topic. I know we have a lot of people out here who are retired. You could probably provide a lot of wisdom for our young people and those who are still working and et cetera, who are still working, can give us a lot of points in that regard. But I think many of us, if not all of us, that of getting to our teenage years, we've all have been employees. We can't always say that we've all been fathers or we've all been mothers, but by and large, we've all been employees. So this, I think, is a very important topic to cover. So let's go with me over to Colossians. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 22. You know, what's most important here in Colossians is that of all the categories that Paul covers here in Colossians, he spends more time detailing out things having to do with what I term employees. He terms it bondservants. He terms it bondservants. Before we start getting into the details of this, I don't want to minimize the fact that when Paul is speaking about bondservants and he's speaking about masters, in that day, he is really speaking about master and slave relationships. That is exactly what he's talking about. But the master-slave relationship that was taking place during Paul's time encompassed a huge part of society. It is estimated that probably around one-third of the population were slaves during that time. So this is a subject that he had to address. So I want to read this summary with regard to bondservants, because, again, I don't want to overlook, as I use employees for bondservants and employers as masters, I don't want to overlook the fact that Paul, in Paul's day, he was really talking about a master-slave relationship. This is out of an internet site called gotquestions.org. I thought it just gave a really nice summary. It says here, a bondservant is a slave. A bondservant is a slave. In some Bibles, the word bondservant is the translation of the Greek word doulos, which means one who is subservient to and entirely at the disposal of his master, a slave. The translation uses the word slave or servant. In Roman times, the term bondservant or slave could refer to someone who voluntarily served others, but it usually referred to one who was held in permanent position of servitude. Under Roman law, the bondservant was considered the owner's personal property. Slaves essentially had no rights and could even be killed with impunity by their owners. The Hebrew word for bondservant is ebed, had a similar connotation as well. However, the Mosaic law allowed an indentured servant to become a bond servant voluntarily. This is out of Exodus 21, verse 5. It says, if the servant declares, I love my master and my wife and children and do not want to go free, then the master must take him before the judges. He shall take him to the door or the doorposts and pierce his ear with an awl. Then he will be a servant for life. Goes on to say this, during the time of Jesus in the first century, as much as one-third of the Roman population were slaves. Another third had been slaves earlier in life. So you have two-thirds of the people who had been slaves or bond servants. This is the way work got done. Work got done through slaves or through bond servants. Says it was most common for freeborn men and women to work side by side with slaves as street sweepers, dock workers, doctors, teachers, and business managers. Convicted criminals became bond servants of the state and usually died working in the mines or in the galleys. But by and large, when you see pictures back in those times, a lot of the individuals that you see working were slaves, which you also couldn't tell necessarily a slave from a free person. They could be working side by side in many duties. For the purpose of our message today and going through Colossians, I'm considering this working relationship as bond servants or slaves as employees. Employees. So I'll be substituting the word employee for bond servant and employer for master, because the meaning and relationships work very, very well. Work very, very well as we'll go through this. So let's begin reading here in Colossians chapter 3, verse 22. We're going to read all the way through verse 25 to start with. So it says, bondservants or employees, obey in all things your masters, or obey in all things your employer, according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But he who does wrong will be repaid for what he does, and there is no partiality. So that's a much longer summary, much larger things that Paul is addressing here than what he addressed on the other areas that we've covered. You know, of all the advice that could possibly be given to an employee who is committed to doing things God's way, the way that God expects, this advice from Paul is absolutely remarkable. It is very humbling when you consider what Paul is instructing here, and he sets the stage for a particular mindset. That's what he's talking about here. He's talking about a particular mindset that we as employees ought to have if we consider ourselves students of God, students of Christ, disciples of Christ. There's a particular mindset that we have to have as employees. And it doesn't matter if we're employees in the work environment, in this world, in the society, or we're talking about employees in the church. Our mindset has to be the same. You know, there's a quote regarding employees and employer relationship that I hope I will never forget. It was an excerpt from a quote by Elbert Hubbard made by my father-in-law, Arnold Hampton, back in 1995 when he resigned his position as pastor of our former church affiliation. This quote struck me and it stuck with me. I'll read the entire quote. He didn't quote the entire thing, but I'll read the entire quote, but I'll put a beep in one of the expletives that Elbert Hubbard uses in his quote. But this is his quote, and this is part of what Mr. Hampton really quoted when he resigned his position as pastor. Elbert Hubbard says this: if you work for a man, in heaven's name, work for him. Speak well of him. Stand by the institution he represents. Remember, an ounce of loyalty is worth a pound of cleverness. If you must growl, condemn, and eternally find fault, resign your position. And when you're outside, bleep to your heart's content. But as long as you are part of the institution, do not condemn it. For if you do, the first high wind that comes along will blow you away, and probably you will never know why. So there are times when it's time to leave an employer. There's times when it's time to leave an employer. But Elbert Hubbard, just like Paul, is speaking in terms of the attitude that we should have as employees as long as we are saying that we're going to work for that employer. The standard is high. The statement is to honor, respect, be loyal to. And then to know where to draw a line. To know where to draw a line. Now, I don't agree with Elbert Hubbard's statement that when you're on the outside, bleep to your heart's content. That's not what a Christian should do. But I do agree with the rest of the quote that if you're going to work for a man, in heaven's name, work for him. Work for him. As we review the pointers to employees today, there is much for employers to learn. And when we go to employers, there are going to be a lot for employees to learn. Paul is focusing on this relationship between employees and employers for a reason. And you can tell by his admonition that the attitude and the mindset hasn't changed much. There's still a tendency for employees to give eye service. And we're talking 2,000 years ago. So things haven't changed a whole lot. So let's begin analyzing Paul's statement here in Colossians, verse 22. Colossians 3, verse 22. It says, employees, obey in all things your master according to the flesh. Now, the fact that he adds this phrase, according to the flesh, or as some translations state, your masters on earth or your earthly masters, it tells us right from the start that there are things that our employer and our perception accurately or inaccurately may or may not do that is more earth-like than heaven-like. Don't be surprised at that. That as an employee, you might find that there are things that your employer does that is more earth-like than heaven-like. If everything operated from the employee's perspective in a godly, holy, righteous, fair, equitable, friendly way, my bonus is so high, I don't want to even ask for any more. My salary is so much, please take some of it back. I want less salary so I can pay less taxes, then Paul wouldn't have to mention this at all. No reason to comment on anything. We would always be happy and satisfied with everything that our employer does. But that's not the case, nor is that reality. And Paul is addressing this. We had those wonderful sermons a few months back by both Dennis and Phil Garland regarding the unfortunate employee-employer episode that they had to endure. If you haven't had an opportunity to listen to that, you can go back and listen to their sermons. Incredible challenges that they had to endure. Yet Paul states that we are to obey our earthly masters in all things. Now, that's a pretty powerful concept, given that he is aligning our obedience with imperfect fleshly leaders. How do you equate this? Other translations state, in everything. In everything. The Greek can also be translated as obey wholly or entirely, which I like better than in everything, wholly or entirely. Paul also uses the word obey. Obey. When he's talking about employer-employee relationships, bondservants to master relationships. It is the same word that we covered. This word obey is the same word that we covered when we reviewed the responsibility of children to obey their parents. This word obey in the Greek means to hear under as a subordinate. It means to listen attentively. The implication means to hear or to confirm and to heed to a command or an authority, to hearken, to be obedient, to obey. That is what we are being called to do as employees. The first thing we need to do is to hear. To hear. The primary root of this Greek word means to hear and then follow what is heard. Therefore, another way to state what Paul is bringing out here is for an employee to hear in its entirety what the employer has to say. Then, even though that employer is of the flesh, with the implication that the employer will say things at times or direct you to do things at times that you do not agree with, as well as instruct you to do things in a way or follow a procedure or process that you don't agree with, as well as what we'll cover later. You may even have an employer who is harsh. Paul says our mindset and our attitude has to be one of obedience, has to be one to hear of its entirety. That's what we're called to be as Christians, Christian employees. Now, understand, we're not talking about an employer asking you to do something that breaks God's law. God's law trumps it all. It absolutely does. But sometimes we can get into a tizzy. I know I have at times. We can get into a tizzy about what we're asked to do by an employer, that we can treat it as though it's something that is breaking God's law. You know, our own self-righteousness and vanity can indeed get us fired or cause us to lose out on an opportunity or a bonus or pay raise or promotion that would otherwise be our due. Why? Because we can take something that an employer asks us to do and treat it as though it is breaking God's law. But it's not. It's their preference as the employer to have us follow through and do things a certain way. We may disagree with that way. You know, why should our attitude be one that is willing to do all things, willing to try to obey our employer? Two reasons. Number one, that we have to keep in mind as employees, number one is that the business is not ours. We can forget that. I mean, I know I have. I've been down that road in all three major employers that I've worked for in my career. I've been blessed. I've only had to work for three. But the business is not ours. The business is his or hers, or the corporation's. If the business were ours, then we would have the flexibility to do whatever we wanted to do the way that we wanted to do it. Hence Paul's warning here. We don't have that flexibility. Number two, we are getting paid to do a job. Unlike the slaves, we as employees, in most instances, are getting paid to do a job. And in most cases, we agreed to do a job for that rate of pay. The employer is providing us income, the primary benefit of us working for the employer. And sometimes it can be hard to remember that. But these are things that Paul is admonishing us as Christians to do. So keep in mind the quote from Albert Hubbard. If at some point you get to the place where you cannot work for the man, then quit and go find other employment. Then quit and go find other employment. But while you are employed, Paul says, listen and follow through what the employer asks you to do. Does it mean you cannot question or bring something to the attention of the employer or the owner or the manager or the supervisor? Of course it doesn't mean that. You can bring those to their attention. But what Paul is particularly focused on is what is our attitude when we do so? Because you see, even as employees, when we're on the job, we are still Christians. We are still under judgment. Not just by the employer, but we are under judgment by God. A huge responsibility that we have. Sometimes it may be prudent to humbly express your opinion, but what's your attitude? Paul goes on to address familiar attitudes and mindsets, which are amazing, is the fact that the same attitudes that he is covering here in his day was an attitude of slave towards a master. So here we are in 2020, and the same attitudes exist when we're getting paid. Why? Because we're talking about a mindset, we're talking about an attitude, we're talking about human nature. And that is what Paul is trying to make sure that the children of God are aware of. Paul is addressing human nature, which can cause us to fall out of grace, not only with our employer, it can cause us to fall out of grace with God. We have to remember that, yes, we can be on our job, and we can do A, B, and C, and think that somehow our job is separated from who I am supposed to be as a Christian. It is not. It is not. So Paul mentions here, he says, obey, not with eye service, as men pleasers. What does he mean by that? Not as eye service, as men pleasers. This is out of Barclay. Barclay's commentary, letters to Philip, Colossians, and Thessalonians. It says this, slaves must not be content with what might be called eye service. They must not work only when the overseer's eyes is upon them. They must not be the kind of servants who C.F.D. Moll puts, do not dust behind the ornaments or sweep below the wardrobe. Talk about janitors. Your job is to clean up. Your job is to be very thorough. So as a result, you know, no one's looking. Well, I'm not going to sweep behind there, and I'm not going to clean up over there. Eye service, meaning that you basically do what you're supposed to do when there are eyes on you. Paul says, not for a Christian. Eye service means to serve with the view of impressing others, to serve in order to call attention to oneself. One who wants to look good only when the master is around. Service performed only under inspection, when they're the eye of the employer, the eye of the supervisor is there. When the supervisor is there, I'm doing everything, got these widgets going, boy. He's lightning fast. I mean, what an efficient guy he is. In time, the supervisor turned that corner, whew. And man, yeah, what happened yesterday? Yeah, did you see the game? It was something, you know. Paul says, no. No, we're being held to a higher standard. You know, most are familiar with employees who work that way. We must not be those employees. There can be a tendency these days to act that way, particularly nowadays with the number of people who are working from home. A tremendous amount of people are working from home, and a tremendous amount of more people will be working from home. So, you know, the only time where there may be an indication of anybody watching you is, number one, they can have all sorts of software that track your statistics, how much you're doing, how much you're on the keyboard, but you can create things to manufacture that. Or when you're sitting in front of the, you know, the camera. The question is, if you know, we move into one of these jobs where we're working from home, how diligent will we be even though the employer is not there watching us? Paul says that's who we must be. We must be diligent without eye service. There is a growing number of jobs that are calling on workers to work from home, to work remotely. Paul says, not with eye service as men pleasers. This is out of Lonida. Lonida says this about people pleasers. They call it people pleasers. It says, pertaining to causing people to be pleased with the implication of being in contrast to God or at the sacrifice of some principle. Pleasing people, men pleasers, denotes the norm of those who, out of fear, try to please their supervisors. Out of fear. You know, I'm not going to do what I normally, you know, I'm not going to do my work as I should. But if there is some type of fear mechanism involved, you know, if suddenly they're going to be coming in and inspecting my work, then I'm going to really get my act together then. But just as long as I know, I mean, I'll probably tell a few stories of my work career along the way. It was always interesting as we got towards December, because we always gave a very handsome bonus around December, how productivity just went through the sky. As though the supervisors didn't know what the employee was like from January, February, March, April, May, etc. We get to November around Thanksgiving, you're getting towards December, bonuses are coming. Oh man, productivity is, whoa, it's rocketing. Why? Because there's a fear that their bonus will be less than what it could be. We can't be those individuals. It's not a matter of doing the job that you're given to do, but not only doing the job, but doing the job always. Doing the job always. That's who we have to be known as individuals to do, to be. Now, what is even worse? Because when I think about eye service, I think about the employee who may be able to even go to the next step of rolling their eyes. That's eye pleasers as well, those who roll their eyes behind the employer's back or the boss's back to display, you know, I know better than he or she knows. You know, the boss is up there talking, you know, giving some presentation. Here's my... Why? They're doing that so the other people out there can say, ah, you know, that guy really knows what he's talking about. Because, you know, he's rolling his eyes. You know, we shouldn't be listening to the boss either. That cannot be us. We may be thinking that the boss has no clue what he's talking about. But it's not our responsibility to telegraph that to everybody else. If we're going to work for a man, then work for him. Then work for him. That's a people pleaser move. That's an eye service move. That can very quickly devalue us as an employee. As an employee. And I've seen that happen too. Somebody got fired right on the spot because the boss just happened to look out around the corner of the eye just as they were doing this. And they couldn't recover fast enough. And I've worked for some pretty shrewd bosses where... This is your last day. Sue me. Go home. Go home. Let's continue here in Colossians 3, verse 22. Colossians 3, verse 22 says, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. In sincerity of heart, fearing God. Paul takes the bar that we as the called of God must strive for and puts it at a very, very, very high level. Can you imagine being an employer and everyone in your corporation is working with a sincerity of heart? They're to please God, do the right thing, perform the right way, do whatever it takes to help the company move forward. That's a beautiful thing. Keep in mind that for the employee, Paul is not qualifying what our response should be based on the employer's attitude. Because our response is sincerity of heart, fearing God. Our response and how we work should be based on how we and what our responsibility should be towards God, not what the employer's attitude is. It's a very high standard that Paul is putting before us. What is our attitude? This word sincerity says sincerity of heart. This word sincerity means personal quality of living life from a pure motive without deceit, associated with words like truth, genuineness, godliness. It is also contrasted against a word like hypocrisy, deceit, and wickedness. We've seen plenty of those folks on the job too. This is out of the topical textbook. About sincerity, it says the quality or condition of being genuine, pure, and true. It says the etymology of the word means tested by the light of the sun. A fascinating image to consider when we read through scripture, where Paul insists that he and his co-workers, this is quoting over in 2 Corinthians 2:17, where Paul insists that he and his co-workers speak as persons of sincerity, as persons sent from God and standing in his presence. That's a tall order. That as an employee, in your mindset, as a child of God, you, in your mind, you're there representing God, his way of life, his character, his work ethic. His work ethic. This isn't a case where you become vain, where you think so highly of yourself, you think so vain of yourself, so self-righteous of yourself that you're going to go up to the boss and tell the boss how to run their business in a spiritual way. That is not what this is talking about. You know, I'm so holy, well, I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong with your business so you can become holy like I'm holy. No, that's a good way to get fired. This is about your attitude, my attitude. It's not about what the boss's or the owner's or the supervisor's attitude might be. This is about how we conduct ourselves as employees. As employees. This is about whether or not we are representing the character of Christ and standing in God's presence when we are at work. It is about sincerity of heart and fearing God in our heart and our mind as employees. This is about humility. Want to boil it down? It really is about humility. Humility. Humility in recognizing that we are representing Jesus Christ and we are operating under the respect and fear of God. Verse 23 says, "And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord, not to men." Not only mentally as far as sincerity of heart and fearing God, but then when you go to do your job, when you go to accomplish what you've been asked to do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. This is an extremely powerful verse, and it's very educational to, you know, our young men or young ladies out here that will be going into their first job in the future or starting off in their careers. Very instructive. Whatever you do, if you bag groceries, sweep floors, clean toilets — we had a little introduction late in the first message — clean toilets, or if you are a corporate executive who sits in a corner office and spend your day negotiating complicated contracts with other companies, or you're on a part of the sales force or the retail force, or you're into nursing, or you're a physician, or you're a dentist, Paul says it's the same thing. Whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. You know, oftentimes young people will get that first job and it's, you know, putting bags in the grocery bag and et cetera. And we're going to have an attitude about it. You know, well, look, you know, he's not putting as many stuff in the bag as I am. The first job, real job that I had, I was working for a cup company. And basically what the machine did is spun around and made cups. And your job for 8 hours was to have the cups down the line, count 50, swing them up, put them in a bigger thing, make a box, put them in a larger box. You get a box of 50 or 20, depending on the size cups. And then you just do that all over again, all day long. That's what you did. All day long, that's what you did. I learned a lot of things about working at their first job. Number one, I was way too efficient than the people that were around me. Because a little old lady said, look, they bought me to the side at lunchtime. They sat me down and said, look, you're here for the summer. We're here for life. You cannot be working that hard. You need to slow it down. I'm thinking, slow it down? I don't understand. Aren't we supposed to be here to produce as much as we can for the boss? You know, I'm there, I'm cleaning my machine. I figure out how long it takes for the glue to get stuck. So, I mean, my machine is going, ooh. There's going, chikung, 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 chikung. Lessons. Lessons in life. But I needed to learn that, no, my character must be to do the right thing, to produce for the boss. I had to, you know, balance the political nature of that. Okay, so I won't turn it up to 180. I'll turn it back down to 160. And the ladies would walk by and turn mine down. Like, you know. Lessons in life. But God says when we go to do work, to do it well. To do it well. One of the other favorite quotes that I have is from Martin Luther King. He says, if a man is called to be a street sweeper, he should sweep streets like Michelangelo painted or Beethoven composed music or Shakespeare wrote poetry. He should sweep streets so well that the host of heaven and earth will pause to say, here lived a great street sweeper who swept his job well. A street sweeper. Now, that was my mindset. You know, I was a big reader of Martin Luther King growing up. And you know, here's my first job. You know, I'm going to be the best, you know, cup packer in this company. Well, that's not what the idea was. But as I moved on in my career, that attitude stuck with me. Be the best for the employer. Don't worry about what other people think, what other people say. I need to be the best that I'm to be for my employer. Verse 24. He said, know that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. You know, this is a mindset. Our mindset must be to do it heartily as to the Lord, that we will receive the inheritance, for we are there. Yes, we're working for the employer, but I'm there serving the Lord Christ. That's how we need to go about our job. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm being judged for and judged about. This is truly speaking to the employee about a mindset that we should have as employees, irrespective of our employer. If we cannot have that mindset because of our attitude or the employer's attitude, you need to consider finding another job or going into a different career. Because God is judging you. He may not be judging your employer. Paul is making clear that even when it comes to our job, our salvation is at play. Continue verse 25. He says, but he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done. There is no partiality. Powerful statement here. Powerful statement here. This is a huge warning for every one of us. Nothing we do goes unnoticed by God. Paul is bringing this out to the slaves, to the employees. Nothing that you do is going unnoticed by God. You do wrong, there's going to be payment for what you do. It may not be in this life, it may not be in that job, but God will hold you accountable. And the things that we do, knowing that it is wrong, we certainly are going to give account for. Not only does God tell us throughout Scripture that we will give account for those things, Paul adds in verse 25 that the wrong will be repaid. Will be repaid. Not just you have to go up and say, I admit it, I did it wrong. No, okay, I got that. But now you need to rectify the situation. This statement alone calls on every employee to make sure that we do things ethically, not grease our own pockets as employees do all the time. If you've been around the working world for any length of time, you've witnessed and are well aware of employees who steal from the company or lie about their work, and they do so for their own personal gain. You've seen it. I've seen it many times. My career with my former employee became available to me as a result of a group of computer programmers who decided that they were smarter than the boss and redirected funds from accounts payable to their own personal bank accounts. They modified the invoices so the accounting department wouldn't even know that there was a discrepancy. They forged documents to cover up their tracks. They were successful in stealing tens of thousands of dollars from the company. The accounting department couldn't pick up on it because their invoices, the billing, from what they could see, matched what was coming in on the accounts receivable. But they didn't know that the customer had received something different, and before it came in, it was intercepted and changed. And the books updated accordingly, and they are stuffing their bank accounts with tens of thousands of dollars. I didn't realize at the time of my interview that most of the questions by the hiring manager had to do with ethics. I had no clue. And when I mentioned to him that I would not be able to work on from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, I saw this big smile come across his face. He was Jewish, and I thought that that was why the smile came across his face, that here's a black young man here that thinks he's a Jew. That's so cute. But in reality, he was smiling because he knew that he had somebody that had ethics, that had morals, that he could train and that he could trust. My first major project was one to investigate through data analysis, programming code, how this theft had taken place and how the accounting department had no records of it. To report my findings, correct the systems, and build different processes, hopefully to prevent this from reoccurring. I was 22 years old. I was the youngest person in that particular department. I was still working on my AA degree in data processing. But the boss saw something. I could speak about computers. I could speak about the theory. I could speak about things. And my wife had prepped me really well for a good interview. And he hired me. Matter of fact, he hired me on the spot, and the other interviews that I had with my supervisor and the manager were just preliminary interviews, just, you know, to get this guy in here. Several programmers had been fired. Legal action was pending against them. and I was asked to do the system investigation. And at the time I'm doing the investigation, you know, they didn't give me all this background. They just said, hey, can you go out and find, you know, what's happening, why this information isn't getting over here, why this information didn't go over here. Can you go out to make some visits to the dealership? So I'm going, I said, okay, well, I know how to investigate. Went out to the dealership, give me a copy of your invoices that you had for such and such. Let me look and see what the invoice, wait a minute there, how did that happen? And where did the money go? I was named Employee of the Year, received an all-expense-paid trip to California, received a bonus and awarded a check in some amount that I don't remember that knocked my socks off. I was promoted from a programmer trainee, two levels, to a project manager in less than a year. And then at the age of 23, I was given responsibility for the department that I had a responsibility to investigate. And everyone in that department began reporting to me. So suddenly, at 23 years old, I have accounting, I have accounts receivable, I have vehicle inventory, I have dealership operations, and I have zero experience. But my boss saw ethics. He didn't need intelligence, he needs someone that could be trustworthy and smart, but trustworthy. Now, unfortunately, throughout my career, I was called on as a result of that, and I became good at investigating such matters. I witnessed the tragedy, both of young and old, violating the principles that the Apostle Paul talks about here of being ethical, of not doing wrong, and that there is no partiality when it comes to a boss making sure, or owner saying, wait a minute, you can't steal from me. It didn't matter who they were. Sometimes that justice was dealt out at the human level in a very raw way. There were individuals who worked in the warehouse that were making $15 an hour, that's about $30,000 a year, who thought that because the company was so rich that the inventory of high-end tires, high-end rims, high-end radios was theirs to steal. Company makes so much money, they're not paying me what I should get paid, so I'll steal this. Well, I had to investigate that and subsequently provide the executives with information to have them fired. But on the other hand of the economic scale, there were executives and vice presidents, still employees. They don't own the company. It's not their payroll. It's not their accounts receivable. We had executives and vice presidents that I was asked to investigate who made hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in salary and bonuses. I mean, $300,000 and $400,000 a year is what they made. And their pay wasn't enough. They also thought that they had the right to use the resources of the company as their personal use, or the corporate cards for their home improvements, or falsifying expense reports, or taking personal trips that they claimed were business related, and after investigation ended up losing their jobs, losing their homes, losing their careers, and losing their marriages. The number of wives that I had come in because I had to be part of the investigation, their husband has gotten fired, and most of the time it was the husband's. I never had to investigate a woman. Why? Because most of those jobs were men jobs. It's the way the system works today. But the number of wives that came into the office after their husbands were fired with tears in their eyes saying, I have four children at home. I can't believe my husband did this. Is there something that you can do? And the company oftentimes would do something and write a check to that wife. We said, your husband lost his job. That's it. That's it. Paul says partiality. It doesn't matter. They forgot that they were employees and they paid the price. This point I want to look at, because that's pretty much what Paul covers here. Scriptures in the Bible that has to do with employees. That has to do with employees, lessons, pearls of wisdom that we can gain having to do with employees. Employees like we are, who are also Christians and children of God. Go with me over to Proverbs chapter 10, beginning in verse 4. Proverbs chapter 10, beginning in verse 4. And in addition to Paul's teaching here in Colossians, there are a tremendous amount of wisdoms throughout the Bible on the subject of being an employee and also working. I'm going to be reading out of a few different translations as I go along, because some translations just make the words here a lot more clear. But here in Proverbs 10, verse 4, in the New King James Version, it says, "He who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich." The NIV says this: "Lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth." As an employee, we have to be willing to work and work hard. Whatever it is, if you're packing bags, if you're sweeping floors, if you're in sales, if you're in retail, if you're a doctor or you're a nurse, God expects you to work hard. He expects us to work hard. And if the pay is not what we want, then we have to work hard to improve our skills and improve our value to the employee, to the employer, who may be willing, if they are able, to provide a pay increase or improve our skills and find other employment elsewhere. But God expects us to be diligent regardless. To be diligent regardless. Let's look at another verse over in Titus. Titus chapter 2 and verse 9. Titus chapter 2 and verse 9. Again, as I read through these, I'll be changing bondservants and masters to employees and employers. I'm going to read this out of the New American Standard Bible, Titus 2 and verse 9. It says, "Urge employees to be subject to their own employers in everything, to be well-pleasing and not argumentative." To be well-pleasing and not argumentative. You know, in the vast majority of cases, an argumentative employee does not gain favor with the employer. If that's your nature, to just be argumentative, you're not gaining favor with the employer. It doesn't work that way. A person can end up very wise in their own eyes, accurate in their own perspectives, but forget that it's not their company. There is often a proper place and a proper way to express one's objections, employee to employer. There may be times to be argumentative, but you need to be wise and know when those times are and when they are not. It may be your role to challenge the logic and processes, as it was my role in many instances to challenge those. But when my boss said, "Enough is enough, David," then I needed to be wise enough to say, "Fine. You want the process to continue and, you know, the waste money, then it's your company. Your company." So we have to best make clear, you know, what our employer's expectation is if we are going to be one that's going to challenge the company with regard to whatever it is that we think. It is not our place to be argumentative. Titus brings that out. Exodus 23, verse 12. Exodus 23, verse 12. You have to cover this. Exodus 23, verse 12. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, that your sons and your female servants and the stranger may be refreshed. The fourth commandment by God, that the seventh day is a day of rest, is not a recommendation. It is not negotiable. You're there representing God, and the employer cannot swallow that, cannot figure out a way around that. If you can't convince them that, "Look, I'll be here Sunday through whatever, but I'm not coming in at Friday night to Saturday night. I'm not doing that." If they don't see enough value in you to be able to figure out a way around that, then you just have to part ways. Because you're being judged by God. This is a command by Almighty God that you, as an employee, follow that verse. It is not a request. It is a command. Proverbs 17, verse 2. Proverbs 17, verse 2. Again, I'm going to read this out of the New American Standard Bible. It says, Proverbs 17, verse 2, "An employee who acts wisely will rule over a son who acts shamefully and will share in the inheritance among brothers." This is a powerful statement from a couple of different perspectives. Number one, there is nepotism in the work environments in this world. What is nepotism? Nepotism is the practice among those with power or influence to favor relatives or friends, especially by giving them jobs. Have you been there? I've been there. You know, a new sales job opens up on across town. You have this person that's there, been working their butt off to be able to get their job, where suddenly, how'd his nephew get that job? He didn't know nothing about the business. Well, that's the way. It's not my company. Nepotism does take place. But that is not always the case, and will certainly not be the case underneath of God's rulership. The person who performs underneath of God's rulership will be rewarded. Even today, there have been many times when a son or a relative is written out of an inheritance or receives substantially less of an inheritance because of their behavior, and the company or the inheritance passes to someone outside of the family. Our responsibility as an employee is to work diligently, regardless of what the employee decides to do with or without their family members. It's their company. People can sit around and judge from here till the cows come home. Well, I can't believe he put his sister in charge of accounts payable. I can't believe he put his brother over top of computer system. I can't. Well, God, it's not your company. You go in there and do your work, and if it's not palatable for you to do so, then build your skills and go elsewhere. Our responsibility as an employee is to act wise, to rule well, inheritance or not, nepotism or not. Proverbs 25, verse 13. Proverbs 25, verse 13. Here in Proverbs 25, verse 13, it says, "Like the cold," this is out of the New King James, "like the cold of snow in time of harvest is a faithful employee to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his employer." I love this particular verse. The question with this verse is, can you be trusted to represent the company when the employer is absent? Can you be sent on a mission to represent the company where the employer sits back and says, "Boy, he did an awesome job. He made us look really good." You know, my former company emphasized to its employees, and especially its executives and Salesforce in particular, that you are held liable to the company even if you are not on company business. It made that clear. If you brought shame to the company by things you were doing on your own personal time, it could have a direct impact on your employment. Like it or not, sue us. But if you shame us, even if you're on your own time, you're going to pay for it. And particularly if you are away on company business, and I had so many instances of people who lost their job, they're away on company business, then they have free time after their work assignment and forgot that they were still representing the company. And unfortunately, many of those occurrences either happened in Atlantic City or in Las Vegas. Where we had several employees over my career that is what we term got rolled. Somebody sits down to them at a bar. They think that they look better than, whoever, Arnold Schwarzenegger or somebody, you know, Denzel Washington, and this particular partner there feeding them this garbage, slips something to the drink, next thing you know, escort it to the room, they're out, they get the company's credit card and spends thousands upon thousands of dollars on the company's credit card. Got rolled. Some individuals, I was able to convince our human resources department not to fire. But if you were at a certain level, you either got fired. If you were at a really high level, you were probably able to figure out a way. But it didn't matter. We ought to be able to go out and represent the company and refresh the soul of our employer. That should be the case. Let's look at Matthew 24, verse 45. Matthew 24, verse 45. Matthew 24, verse 45. Who then is a wise employee who his employer made ruler over his household to give him food in due season? Blessed is that employee whom his employer, when he comes, will find so doing. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. Now, Christ here, because he actually in this verse uses the term servant and master, he is taking an example of an earthly example and setting it into a spiritual context. But he's taking a physical example. He's taking a human example of a servant and a master, and then saying this servant and master relationship has a correlation to what can happen at the spiritual level. But let's keep it at the physical level. Let's keep it at the physical level. Now, I remember calling, and the question here is, can you be trusted that when the master comes to find, when the boss comes to visit your division, when the boss decides that they're going to come and check out your department, check out your particular area. Is he going to find, or she going to find, things being done in a way that is expected? Or are they going to find something totally opposite? That's the question. You know, I remember calling a customer as a result of this stellar contact report. A contact report is what many sales persons need to turn in at the end of the month. To say, you know, this is the sales, you know, I talked with this particular customer, things are really going great here, need help here. So this contact report came in, and I called this particular company, customer, as a result of this stellar contact report that this one of my regional managers had submitted. You know, I called the customer because I wanted to thank them for their loyalty. I mean, this contact report said this customer was just outstanding. And I met with this customer, and they bought some, you know, this, that, and the other, and they were wonderful to the company. They're a loyal customer, and this is something I need to call the customer up and thank them for their loyalty to the organization. When I called the customer, they had to admit that they hadn't seen the manager in months. But the contact report said that he had just met with this customer last week. Something's going on here. I smell a rotten egg. What's happening here? So unfortunately, I have to take off my manager hat and put on my investigator hat again. My regional manager that had a prestigious area of the country that he was responsible for was about 2,000 miles away from my office. This had to sacrifice him taking time away from home to go here and figure out what's going on here. I made a visit to the region, won't go into too many details, of the stellar manager. By and large, after just talking with some of the customers, talking with other employees, you know, people began to tell the truth about what was going on. To find that most of my stellar manager's time was spent relaxing on the beach, making promises to customers about gifts that they were to receive. And the gifts that he would give them were gifts that they were due as a result of purchases that they made. So the person buys $10,000, say for instance, worth of such and such. They're due a $1,500, whatever it is, from the company. And the manager is supposed to just go over there, thank you for your loyalty. No. He's going to make that benefit from the company something that he's personally doing and personally responsible for. So the customer's like, you doing this just for me? Oh, yeah, you know, because you're such a good customer, you know, I'm going to do this for you this time. You know, no, the customer spent $10,000 worth of widgets. They're due that. But he would go write up these glowing reports, not actually visit them, and he's sitting on the beach. When the boss came, the employee was not found to be managing the goods and services, just what Christ says. My employee was a little over a year from being eligible for retirement. He only had about a year and a half before retirement. I had the right to fire him on the spot. And if I'd fired him on the spot, he would have lost a huge amount of money. And I had known him for almost 30 years. I extended grace. He got a zero bonus, but he didn't get fired, even though my executive said, it's your choice, but you need to fire him. But I didn't. I didn't. When the master comes, when the boss comes, he ought to be able to find your department, if you're standing representing Jesus Christ, so doing. That's what we're called to do. He says, assuredly, in another point here, verse 47 says, assuredly, I say to you that if I find that the case, I will make him ruler over all his goods. You know, this is speaking about a promotion. This is speaking about a promotion. So the Bible covers this concept as well. It's often stated that those who are promoted because they are already performing in the roles above the responsibilities that they're currently being compensated for. Those in general, are the individuals who get promoted. The ones who are getting, you know, at this level, they're performing at this level without a whole lot of argumentativeness. And the boss says, you know what? They're performing in that role. Promote them to what they're doing. And guess what? They get in that role because of mindset. They're going to get that role down and guess what? They then are going to perform at this role, at this level. You know, I so often had individuals in my division who were longtime employees and complained year after year about others who were surpassing them along the career path. I've been here for 35 years, and I'm still a programmer trainee. I can't believe this. And I would counsel them and say, look, you're getting paid exactly for what you're doing. You're doing programmer trainee work. The ones who are going above are doing other high-level work. They're performing at a higher level. They're getting rewarded at a higher level. Well, if you pay me more, then I'll work more. That's not the way it works. I'm sorry. I can't believe this. You're so unfair. You know, you give me that bonus. Well, I can show you I can do the work. No, how about showing me you can do the work beforehand? Because once I give you that pay increase, I can't take it back without a demotion. And then we have a whole nother issue. Christ says, assuredly, I say to you, I will make him ruler over all his goods. Why? Because he's already performing at that higher level. That needs to be our mindset as good Christian employees. As good Christian employees. 1 Timothy 6, beginning in verse 1. 1 Timothy 6, beginning in verse 1. Read this again out of the New American Standard Bible. 1 Timothy 6, verse 1, it says, all who are under the yoke as employees are to regard their own employers as worthy of honor, so that the name of God and our doctrine will not be spoken against. Huge. Huge. All who are under the yoke as employees are to regard their employers worthy of honor, so that the name of God and our doctrine will not be spoken against. Oh, I know that you're a part of this, Church of God, a worldwide association, but boy, you sure don't act like what I'm reading on Life Open Truth. And I heard you cursing out at the water fountain yesterday. I mean, come on, you call yourself a Christian? You're going to come in here and tell me that you want Friday night to Saturday night off? That's blasphemy. That calls people to blaspheme God, the doctrine, the truth, by how we're representing God as employees. God's not pleased with that. Timothy said that's not right. You know, for those of us who are employees, you know, is that our attitude? Is that our mindset? To regard those who are over us, our superiors, our managers, vice presidents, chairman of the board, shareholders, the owners, to regard them, to give honor to them, so that God's name, God's doctrine should not be blasphemed by anything that you say or do. Remember, the company's not yours. Your reputation is. The number of people that I've hired who after 6 months or maybe less than that, 2 months, suddenly can tell the owner, all the managing directors or the department heads, all the things that they're doing wrong. Just hired. You've been here for 3 weeks, and suddenly you're going to tell the owner how to run his business. I've seen it happen over and over again. You know, I have a friend, close friend, who cannot hold a job because they cannot help themselves after 3 months on any job from telling the boss how to run their business. Doesn't have honor, doesn't have respect, doesn't hold in high esteem. These individuals, highly skilled, highly knowledgeable, but it's not their company. It's not their company. They're so smart that they dishonor the man and the woman who's paying them a paycheck. So smart, so intelligent. You know, I have a close friend, a very close friend, who had been unemployed for over a year. He was an extremely good handyman, could basically fix anything in your house. Extremely good handyman. He finally landed a job with the window installer who was highly successful putting in windows in homes around the city, his own business. The owner of the company was well known, well respected for his work. My friend finally gets a job working for this individual as his employee. After 2 or 3 months, he gets into continual arguments with the owner regarding how the owner ought to install windows differently than he does. The owner of the company had to let him go, and all my friend could do after that was fuss and complain about how he was right, how the owner was wrong, how much money the owner could have been making if he had installed windows his way, but now he's back on the unemployment line and feeling proud about himself. I mean, we've seen this happen over and over again. And it happens so often with, enthusiastic young people. Not only, but it seems to circle around, a certain age group at times. After a while, hopefully you mature. Even though this friend of mine was well into his 50s and still couldn't figure out how he kept getting fired and getting released. Albert Hubbard said, if you're going to work for a man, then work for him. Work for him. Hold those owners, those business owners, those executives, the one who is providing you that job, in high honor. Next, final section of scripture that I want to cover regarding employees. What if you have an absolutely horrible employer? Absolutely horrible employer, an unrighteous, unholy employer who is asking you to do things, not do things that break God's law, but this particular employer is ill-mannered, a bad manager, bad manners, untrustworthy, says one thing, does something else, all sorts of things, not committed, unfair to employees, but you still need a job, you still need to work, you still need to pay, get pay. You have a family at home you need to take care of. You have bills that need to be paid. And this is your employer. You know, my mother would tell me and tell one of my brothers who had a hard time holding down a job. This was her statement. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Basically, what she's saying, don't lose that job you have until you have another one. Don't go in there running your mouth about this, that, and the other until you have a backup plan. And that backup plan is working. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. You're getting a paycheck. Peter provides this very detailed advice for working with difficult employees. Go with me over to 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18. 1 Peter 2 and verse 18. It says here, 1 Peter 2 and verse 18, and I would think, you know, by and large, most of us don't have employers who are just absolutely insane. Some of you do. I have had bosses who were, I mean, you couldn't trust them. You couldn't trust them from here to that mic. You couldn't trust anything that they said, anything that they did, any promises that they were making. Couldn't trust them. Most of my bosses that I've had over my career were very good and trustworthy. They weren't godly. They did all sorts of things that they should not have done, but that wasn't about me. What was about me is what I was doing, not what they were doing. But if you have a bad employee, look at what Peter says here in 1 Peter 2, beginning in verse 18. Employees, be submissive to your employers with all fear. Not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. For this is commendable if, because of conscience towards God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, then it is commendable before God. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps. But also to the harsh. Also in situations where you're not being treated fairly. Those absolutely do come up. This is Satan's world. But Peter tells us here how we ought to work through with this. With patience. You know, there are circumstances where we may have worked for a very difficult employer. And the situation is unbearable or unfair, but because we need to make, again, a living, continue to work, continue to labor with that employer, and take it to God. That's what God expects. But also remember the quote by Elbert Hubbard, that if you must growl, condemn, and eternally find fault, resign your position. Resign your position. Don't allow an employer to cause you to bring into question your salvation. You find yourself going in and wanting to curse the guy out. You're the one that needs to find something else. He's not under the gun. You're under the gun, so to speak. You're the one that's being judged. You can't figure out, you know, some avenue, et cetera, and it gets to be so unbearable that you begin to lose it. You need to find somewhere else to work. sad when that comes to be the case, but again, refer you to those sermons by the Garland brothers. That ends up being the case sometimes. But you cannot lose your salvation because of an employer. God says no. He understands that you may have to work under the harsh, but you have to have a consciousness towards God in enduring that grief until things change or you decide to make a change. There is a lot more to be said with regard to this subject, but I think that's plenty for today. Let's go back and read Colossians chapter 3, verse 22. Colossians chapter 3, verse 22 to 25, where we started, said this, Colossians 3, verse 22. Employees, obey in all things your employers according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord, not as to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. For you serve the Lord Christ, but he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done, and there is no partiality. Next time, we're going to look at the responsibility of the employer. The employer. As a child of God, the responsibility of an employer, it's huge. It's huge. It's bigger than that of an employee. It's huge. And when we get to the employee, the employer, we're going to expand the definition just a little bit from just employer to manager, supervisor, because I know that we do have a few here who own their own business, but we also have several here who have worked or are currently working in positions where you have responsibilities over employees. And many of the same things apply that God says to employers who have responsibility over the lives of employees, to managers and supervisors who have an impact on other employees. God has a lot to say on this subject as well. So next time we'll pick up with part 15, the Christian home, employers.